Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Have you ever found yourself heading straight into danger?
So I jump over the chasm, and I have to kind of toss my surfboard over the side into this embankment. I finally get down to the bottom, and my legs are shaking, and I'm at this point excited and terrified. And he looks larger than life.
What if you knew you were going to be confronted? What would you say?
And I looked at him and I said, I know. It's been a long time since I've been here. It's cool. I'll work it out. And he says to me, what the fuck do you think you're doing?
Find out what happened next and stay tuned for Dr. Michael Gervais from Finding Mastery and his story, Go or Don't Go. Stay close.
Hey, it's Michael Gervais and you're listening to Story Worthy.
Welcome to Story Worthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. I am so glad you guys tuned in today. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Story Worthy. Okay, did you guys get a chance to listen to last week's story by comedy writer and actress Lauren Reeves? It was called I Found a Human Foot in the Woods. Oh, sure. You've heard that story so many times, haven't you? Listen, you guys, it's really funny, and Lauren is such an amazing talent. So if you haven't heard it yet, go back and listen to that. But for today I have a fabulous guest with me. Now, I don't know if he's ever found a foot in the woods, but I know he's done a lot of really interesting things. Now, he's not a comedian, and he's not a television writer, like many of the guests on Storyworthy. Today's guest is actually a high-performance sports psychologist, and he has one of my very favorite podcasts out there called Finding Mastery. It's about learning how to get to the top of your game, and Mike interviews Olympic athletes, artists, musicians, and others that are deeply engaged in what they do. You've got to listen to that as well. And not now, later, after you listen to Storyworthy. Now today, Mike brings forth the topic, go or don't go. And I have to say that this is definitely something that I've encountered in my life. You have to make a decision whether to make something happen or just, you know, live in your comfort zone. That might be leaving your hometown or staying in the neighborhood you grew up in and being satisfied with that. Or it might be, you know, taking a chance on a new job or taking a pay cut. I mean, we all have to make big decisions. Now, I have to say, I'm pretty good at taking chances, and I think part of that is because, as many of you know, I'm a cancer survivor. Now, I had this really rare type of cancer that was diagnosed at the age of 31, called an adult Wilms tumor. And after that happened, you know, like, the fact that it came out of the blue, like, out of nowhere, and it was so rare, and one day I was healthy, and then the next day I was incredibly sick. It's just like, now that I'm well and I have hair, it's like every day that I'm healthy, I really try to take the opportunity to make something happen, you know? I really try to do that. And a part of me learning how to do that is listening to shows like Finding Mastery. It really is amazing. All right, now before we get to Mike's story, I did want to remind you guys to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Storyworthy, and why not head over to storyworthypodcast.com and join my mailing list? You see, then I give you a little email every week, and maybe you write me back. Next thing you know, we're friends. It's a lot of fun. And also, you guys, here's something you can do. Tell a friend or a family member about Storyworthy today. Like, just right now, think of somebody you know that would really enjoy this program today. Okay, you got it? Now do it. Share this program with somebody you know today. It's probably right there at the bottom of your screen. Just hit the share button. Really, you guys, word of mouth is the best thing you can do to support Storyworthy. Okay? Okay. Dr. Michael Gervais is a sports psychologist whose show Finding Mastery is right here on the Wondery Network. Now, Dr. Gervais' goal is to find out how the greatest performers in the world use their minds to pursue the boundaries of human potential. That sounds like a lot, right? It is a lot. Check this out. Now, Mike, notice how he's now Mike to me. Mike has interviewed an MVP from every major sport. He's interviewed internationally acclaimed artists and musicians and Fortune 100 CEOs. They talk about craft and the inner experience. There is so much to learn. Mike has also been featured by CNN, The Wall Street Journal, ESPN, NBC, NFL Network, Red Bull TV, Extra, The Huffington Post, Outside Magazine. It just goes on and on, you guys. And you can find Mike at michaelgervais.com and also on Twitter at Michael Gervais. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Finding Masteries, Michael Gervais.
So I jump in my car, and I'm about as excited as I can be. And I'm driving about 2 miles away, and it's my favorite surf break. And there's something that happens when you're about to go do something that you love doing, and something that is more than an activity. It's more than just doing something. There's something that happens to all of us, to me, when what I'm about to do is more of a calling. And that calling feels like it's richer than the actions, because there's an immersion that takes place for me that I'm completely consumed. So what happens for me as I jump in the car? It's a beautiful day out. The sun is shining. It's exactly what you would imagine sunny Southern California looking and feeling like. I've got my wetsuit, I've got my surfboard, and I'm by myself. So I take the ride and I get to my favorite surf break. Now, when I say favorite surf break, I've looked at this surf break over and over and over again for years. And it's right down the road from where I live. Now, the problem with this surf break is that it's localized. And a local surf break means that it's not welcome to people who don't surf there every day. Now, when I was a kid, I used to surf there often. But I went away and I went to school and, you know, raised a family and I came back. And when I came back, I was no longer able to surf there. So I'm standing on the cliff, surfboards in the car. I know the protocol. You don't show up there and just kind of go out. And there's a cliff, and that cliff is about 200 feet, 300 feet tall. And to get down to the surf break, it's a sketchy little goat trail, narrow. There's parts that you really have to get down low to hold your to hold yourself in the dirt. It's dangerous, but it's not overwhelming, but it's dangerous. So I'm standing at the top, and now this is one of the greatest swells in the last 5 years. And a swell is meaning that there's big waves coming. And I pull up and I'm so excited. And there I am standing on the edge of the cliff. There's about 15 other people watching the surf. And it's one of those experiences where people are looking going, oh my God, that's amazing. Even though that they don't surf, it's just beautiful. The waves are huge. The water is clear. The sun is out, and it's captivating because the surf is so big. And when I say big, it's not enormous, but it was about 15 feet. And there's this imaginary line that when a surf break, the face of a wave is more than 12 feet, it becomes something that is all business, meaning that it is risky. So there I am. And I look down, there's only three people in the water. And that's the rule at the surf break. Because if you don't play by the rules, your tires will get slashed, you'll get possibly beaten up, you'll be pushed around in the water into the dangerous places because there's rocks that are exposed in the water. It's a very dangerous and intense place to surf, not just because of the size of the waves, but because of the people that are there. And it's called localism. It's a little bit like a gang, and it's not safe. So I'm standing at the top. There's about 15 other people looking, and I look over the cliff. There's one person at the bottom of the trail, and he's guarding the trail. There's another person that is right in front of the surf break on a little platform that the locals have built, and he's guarding that area. And then there's three people out in the water. So I'm standing up there on the top, and I want to surf. I'm so excited to surf, but I'm scared and I'm terrified. And I can feel my legs shaking, and I can feel my heart pounding. And I'm standing at the top of the cliff with all these other people, knowing that if I run back to my car and I grab my surfboard and I'm running down and I start to go down the trail, that I'm going to be hassled, potentially even confronted, and maybe even threatened at the top of the cliff. Then there's the goat trail to navigate. And that goat trail with adrenaline it's a sketchy deal. Then I have to navigate and negotiate the person who's guarding that goat trail at the bottom. And again, the person that's guarding the base camp, and then deal with the surf, and then deal with the three guys that are out in the water. So there's a lot of threats that are taking place. So I'm standing at the top. It's something I love doing. And I'm now have a standing civil war within myself. do I go or do I don't go? And I'm up at the top and I'm starting to get pissed. And I'm thinking to myself, what is wrong? Like, why am I afraid? Why am I so scared? What is it? Why am I wanting to do this but terrified to go? So it wasn't the anger that was keeping me stuck. It was the fear. And I was terrified. I was scared enough of the waves because you have to respect Mother Nature at this level of intensity. But it was more the physical harm and the embarrassment potentially from the other men that were guarding this treasure. So it's a standing civil war, and the conversation sounds like, I don't know, I don't need to go here. I could go somewhere else. There's lots of places I could surf, but this is a perfect surf break, and the conditions are just right. And it's a private little gem, and I've always wanted to surf there for a long time since I was a kid, but I didn't have the courage to do it, to deal with the conditions that I just described. And so then I say, of course I'm going to surf this. Of course I'm going to go. What kind of man am I? What kind of human am I if I'm going to be bullied by what could go wrong? And then I say to myself, no, you don't need to do this. There's too much at risk. This isn't really what you want. It's okay. And then I say to myself, well, what am I going to tell my son when this swell, this epic swell in the last half a decade reaches Southern California and I decided to not surf at the most pristine place? And so that's the standing civil war. And I go back and forth and I go back to my car a bit dejected. And I sit in my car and I close the car door and I'm back to being pissed. What am I doing? I say to myself, like, what have I done that I'm afraid to listen to my truth? And I get out of the car, I run across the street, back to the edge of the cliff, and I'm looking again, and it is perfect. The rollers are coming in, the waves and sets are just right, and it's still got all of the hostility that you can imagine. And I look around, and it's about half the crowd now. And I look behind me to see if they're getting their surfboards and they're getting ready, and they're just gone. The cars are gone. So I go back to my car, and I'm still confused at this point. I'm tapping the roof of my car. My arms are stretched out above the open door, the driver's side door, and I'm trying to figure out what to do. And I look to my right, back to the cliffside, and there's no one there. It's gone. And without any hesitation, I grab my surfboard as quick as I possibly could. I throw my wetsuit over my board and I start running. My heart is pounding. My legs are shaking. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this window of opportunity has just taken place. And all I can hear is my mentor inside of my head saying, Mike, be you. Just be you. Trust yourself. You've got what it takes. You've always trusted yourself. You can do this. And I have this voice in my head that's overriding that doubt and that inner experience of fear. And so my legs are shaking and I slip down this little hidden goat trail to start to head down to the surf break. And now with legs shaking and the adrenaline running and I'm starting to work through this doubt, I can feel that I'm starting to get in trouble because the recent rains have eroded part of the goat trail. And I haven't been on this goat trail for probably 12 years. And I wasn't sure if I needed to jump over the small little chasm or if I needed to figure out kind of a different way that looked like there was some tracks. So I jump over the chasm and I have to kind of toss my surfboard over the side into this embankment. And I get through and I take a breath. And I'm like, what am I doing? And I look up and I'm about halfway down the trail. And I look back down and there's a man looking at me. And so I know that I'm going to have to deal with this man that's guarding the goat trail. I get down to the bottom. I finally get down to the bottom and my legs are shaking. And I'm at this point excited and terrified. And he looks larger than life. And he says to me, what the fuck do you think you're doing? And I looked at him and I said, I know. It's been a long time since I've been here. It's cool. I'll work it out. And he looks at me and he says, all right, you don't have to work it out with me. And he points to the water and he says, work it out there. So now there's cobblestone rocks that I need to go through. Again, my adrenaline is pumping, my legs are shaking, my hands are rattling, and I'm trying as hard as I can to keep my shit together inside. And I walk over to the platform where the other guy is changing and he's getting into his wetsuit. And he looks at me with the most disdain you could imagine. And he's up on this platform and he looks like he's 15 feet tall. And so he says to me, "You're not trying, are you?" And I said to him, with this Jedi mind trick, if you will, I know, it's been a long time since I've been here. I'll work it out. And he looks back at me and says, "You've got to be kidding me." And so I quickly change in my wetsuit. It just so happens that one of the guys was coming out of the water. The guy that was on the platform, he's kind of barking something into, I can't even hear what he's saying, but he's barking into the guys that are surfing out in the waves, something along the lines like, "Get this motherfucker." And so I'm now like, what have I got myself into? But I'm committed. So I'm paddling out. The surf is large. I'm scared. I'm trembling, which is not uncommon for large surf. There's a tremble that comes with any time you're going to do something intimidating, but it's overwhelming at this point. So I set my mind, literally my mindset was like, I'm surfing. And so now I've got this intense focus. One of the guys out in the back surfing makes a beeline. He paddles right to me. And it just so happens a wave comes. So he's now got a dilemma. The dilemma is, do I take this wave that's really good, or do I hassle this guy that's coming out to surf our break? So he takes the wave. And I look out, now there's two guys in the back, two guys left. Another wave comes. So one of the two takes the wave. And now the last person and I are making eye contact, and I'm paddling as fierce as you can imagine, straight to him. He looks at me and I looked at him, and right at that moment, another wave came. And so I'm in the right position. I took that alpha position. I went right to the key spot. And so now there's a moment. Do I take this wave or do I give it to him? So I passed and I gave him the wave. And I said to him, and here I am giving gifts. I said, "This is yours. I'll work my way in." So he's as excited as you can imagine. Now I'm sitting out the back by myself. Everyone had just surfed a wave. They're starting to paddle towards me, and I'm trying to catch my breath. And there I am, exhausted, thrilled, excited, focused, a little bit angry because I'm trying to work into that mindset. And a wave comes, and now it's my turn. And there's an unwritten rule in surfing. If you don't take the set wave, if you don't take the wave when you're in position, you will not get another wave. You'll be dropped in, you'll be snaked, you'll be hassled, it will be brutal. So I'm out back, my entire body is flooded, I drop in, and I just went into automatic pilot. And all of the training and all of the years of surfing, of doing what I love to do when it's not just a sport, it's that thing that feels like I'm completely immersed and completely connected. And I jump to my feet, I'm not sure exactly how it happened, but automatic programming took over. I bend my knees, I drop to the bottom of the wave, and I'm anchored on my back foot, big bottom turn, sweeping bottom turn, and I can feel the thunder of the wave. I look up, it's about two stories high, and just short of two stories high, about a 15-foot face, and then I carve up the face of the wave, replant my back foot, and make this beautiful turn, and I can remember it just like I'm in it, and I make this turn, and it felt like it was just right. Complete connection and timing to the wave, to my body, to my mind, to my spirit. And it was happening. And I did a couple more moves on the wave, pulled out like it was no big deal, paddled out the back. Now there's only two guys because one guy was tired and he went in, and they looked at me. And we just looked at each other. And then there's the moment of truth. One of the men says to me, "Thanks, bro. That was cool." And I said, "Oh my God," I sat there and I just grinned like it was no big deal. And I said to myself, this is what happens when you trust yourself, Mike. This is what happens. It doesn't matter what somebody else says. It doesn't matter what they do. It is time to trust yourself completely. And so therein lies the process of me working out this doubt, this fear, this anxiousness, the trembling within, to be able to figure out a way to set my mind to follow my path. And it was the beginnings of me figuring out, really, can I test myself and do difficult things when no one's looking? Because I could have made up another story and gone a different direction. I've made up a story to my son, made up a story to other people about why I didn't surf this break on this particular day. And so I wanted to cry. I wanted to beam with joy because there was so much happening. And I sat there. I knew that this was a moment for me to capture my path of mastery.
That was a hell of a story. Man, I was right there with you in that wave.
Yes, it was fun.
Listen, you're the first surfer we've ever had on Storyworthy, which is pretty interesting, actually, because we've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a surfer. I love surfing. And I got to be careful because the people that I know are best in the world. Let me say that more eloquently. Many of the people I'm fortunate enough to know are some of the best in the world at surfing. And so, like, when I say I surf, I say it with the most humility that I possibly can because they really, really do something special.
No, I understand that. It's just that I've never spent any time talking with anybody that surfed. And I've spent a lot of time in Malibu, California, and I've watched surfers, but I never heard anybody describe it the way you just did. And also, I know about public beach access. And so I was thinking about that when you mentioned, you know, them trying to tell you that you can't surf where it's public. But I find it really interesting. So let me just ask you a few questions about the waves. Okay, so you know how at the end you said that guy could take the wave, like you gave him that wave? So how long could he ride that wave?
Well, this particular wave is about 30, 40, 45 seconds, which doesn't seem like a long time. But it's actually, if you count it out in your head, there's a lot that happens in sub a minute, you know,
sure,
in any physical form here. So it's about 30, 45 seconds of a wave. And it's a wave where if you don't kick out soon enough, that you'll be on dry rock, and it's got like a danger element to it, which adds to the whole intensity and the fear that I was trying to work out.
And what does kick out mean?
Okay, thank you. Kicking out means like you just finish the wave, and the thought of like Waikiki Beach is that you finish the wave and you step off to this beautiful white sand and everything's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't that happen?
No, not in this place. Like it's called a finger reef. And so if you don't kick out in time, you end up on dry rock that's not a good place to be.
It's so dangerous, right?
Well, you know, not in a dramatic sense, but there are consequences that happen if you don't play by Mother Nature's rules.
Okay, so let's say you're on the beach and you're looking out onto the ocean and you see that the surf sets are like perfect. So how long might that last?
Yeah, so there's a few variables that need to line up. You need to have a swell coming in, and so it's called a groundswell. And a groundswell comes in when there's some sort of environmental condition way off in deep in the ocean or Alaska or something happens where there's a shift in tectonic plates, there's some big storm or a glacier drops off and it pushes a bunch of water into Southern California. And so that's one of the elements that has to happen. The tide has to be right. The wind has to be right.
How often does that happen?
Well, I don't know. Maybe there's this was the best swell in Southern California in a 5-year period. Now there are maybe 12 swells that happen throughout a winter time frame. 12, 15 swells, somewhere in that range. Maybe there's more. I'm not exactly sure. But it's not like you can go surf any day you want. The conditions have to be right to be able to do it. So there's a time of day, a time of the week that all of these things need to line up for it to be optimal. And this was one of those really rare things when all three lined up. And it just so happened that the swell was large.
But I mean, there's people surfing every day. There's always people in the water, even if they're just like paddling around.
There's always people in the water, but it's like, if it's 1 foot, there'll be somebody out, but it's not, you know, it's tough to surf in those conditions because it's so small and the waves aren't very strong. And then as soon as it gets like above 12, 15 feet, most surfers don't go because it feels like it's business, you know, and those that enjoy it, like the ones that are great at surfing, they revel in and they dwell in that 12 to 15 to 20 to 25 foot space. They love it because the adrenaline and in their body is something that allows them to go beyond what they thought was maybe possible for them. So, this was one of those times that I was at a limit for me.
Okay, so how old were you on this day that this happened?
My son was 2 years old, and so this was probably about, let's see. So no, he was just born. I strike that because he couldn't talk yet. So this was 9 years ago.
Okay. I mean, were you 35 or 45?
Okay. So at that point I was 35.
Okay. Cause I'm just trying to get clarity because it just seems to me like that's interesting that was the moment that you chose to get respect and, you know, walk the talk and do what you said you were going to do. I mean, did you have that kind of confidence before or did you not?
Okay, well, so to give you some context, first, I didn't do it for any respect of other people. Like it was a test for me of whether I could be the man I said I wanted to be. Now, who cares about surfing, really? Like, it's not about the surfing piece. It's about that test of, do I have the strength to be the person that I want to be when it's difficult to be that person? And if you go way back to when I was a kid, the reason I found the field of sports psychology is because when I was surfing as a young kid, and now go back to high school, when I was surfing then on a regular basis, I could surf just fine when nobody was looking or when there was just the buddies. But then as soon as I entered a contest, it felt like I lost my mind and I couldn't feel my body. And literally, when the beach was crowded, there was judges and family and friends watching, and there was only one or two people in the water, that I felt like I couldn't feel my feet. I had so much anxiousness and fear that I had a disconnect between my body, my mind, and my heart. And so I didn't know what that was, but it was performance anxiety. And it was just general anxiety that was getting in the way of me being able to access my craft. So I struggled with it. And I found this field. One of my mentors introduced me to this field of psychology. And it was like, oh my God, you can actually train your mind? Because I thought psychology was for people that were broken or dysfunctional in some way, or like seriously had a mental disorder. And there are plenty of, you know, there's plenty of those folks that are really struggling, and the science and the art of psychology has done tremendous good for people. But there's another part of it, which was like, how do you train your mind to be the best version of you? And so I needed this myself to figure it out. And so I studied as long as I possibly could, and I'm still studying it now. And that's the purpose of the Finding Mastery podcast. It's like a postdoctoral course of study for me, is to learn from the brightest minds in the world.
Let me tell you, it is such a good podcast, Michael. Really, thank you so much for doing it. It's like every week I learn so much. I mean, and just now, your story. I mean, I learned so much. I really appreciate your integrity. And also that you're honest about the fact that it happened when you were 35.
Oh, and I'm still working it out. There's still things that I need to sort out to love deeper, to feel deeper, to give more, to be more authentic, to search for deeper meaning in life, to share that, to be deeper connected. So all of that.
Because I think a lot of people think they have to have their shit together at 22 or 25 or 30 or even 40 or 50. And, you know, who knows how long it's going to take. You know, you can always be discovering, always learning, and it's never too late, right?
No. I'm still trying to sort of...
I don't know, Mike. You sound pretty perfect.
We all have a dark side, and we all have the other side to it. So no, not even close. And so, like, I'm happy to talk about all of my failures because I learn more from those from other people. And so, no. I'm a work in progress and trying to sort it out.
Well, okay. That's interesting, because that's actually kind of one of my questions for you. I know that you interview amazing athletes. I mean, Olympic athletes and people at the top of their game. And athletes are more doers than thinkers, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get around getting information from an athlete without talking about their, you know, their wins and their accolades and their record?
Well, the way that I understand sport and performance and business is that it's all, each one of them, whether it's, well, the way I understand it is that it's just an excuse. It's just this experience and this culture that we've created to be able to have relationships with each other, to better understand how the world works, how we work, how we fit. And so it's really just an excuse to explore. And that, so we just strip away the thing that we do and to get to the person of who we want to become. And that's, for me, the most fascinating, almost nearly unsolvable puzzle, because it's dynamic, it's ever-changing, each moment is uniquely new, and each moment really is the test.
But isn't each moment sort of repetitive for an athlete? Like, they keep doing the same thing over and over again. I mean, there's a lot of repetition, right?
No, so repetition comes to be able to grease the grooves, to refine skills, but every moment that you're doing something, whether it's practicing the craft of storytelling or stand-up or acting or whatever it might be, is completely new, and it requires some sort of adjustment to the nuances of this moment. And so that is so stimulating and so rich that the best in the world are fascinated by this next moment that's about to happen? And can they capture it? Can they be connected to it? Can they be in harmony? Can they be on time with the moment so they can access the craft that they've trained their asses off for so many years? And can they do it in an authentic way? And that is that, that moment is available right now for you and I. It's a moment for all of the your listeners. Can we authentically be ourselves in this moment and then this moment again? And that is the inner experience that is fascinatingly complicated.
Okay, so do you believe there's such thing as like one big moment and then things can change?
No.
Or is it, you know, a series of smaller moments that are collectively change your life? Like, for example, let's say somebody wins the Super Bowl, but then that's only one Super Bowl. Like, you need to win two or five or, like, I mean, how many until you achieve mastery?
So, no, there's, I don't, so when you listen to ESPN or you listen to any media outlet commentary, they'll say a big moment, a defining moment. We've been brainwashed in that way of thinking since we were watching television, that there's a defining or big moment. There's a big play, a big game, Super Bowl, whatever it might be. And I don't see it that way. What I've come to understand that is true for me, and it might not be true for others, but it's true for me that all we have is this moment. And this is the most important moment that we have, because if we miss this moment, we've missed life. If somebody takes the opportunity for you to be in this moment away and you no longer have life, that is death. And so we don't understand what happens once we cross the threshold from physical form, but this is the only moment, and it's the most important moment we have. And this moment is no bigger than another moment. It just might be that other people are watching in other moments. So the moment that I just described on the top of the cliff, it was not a defining moment. It was a moment for me to relish, to acknowledge that the work that I was trying to put in for many years to be authentically myself in the face of intense consequences, perceived or real, is that I was able to work through it. And then, so it's not a defining moment. It was just a moment that acknowledged that I was on this path of trying to be authentically myself and to do it at the best possible place. And that is what the path of mastery is. It doesn't mean mastery of craft. It means that there's just a path where we're becoming the best version of ourself.
Okay, we got to wrap it up in a second, but let me ask you, can you think of another example? I mean, it can be fictional, but when somebody can, you know, kind of get that moment that you got standing on that cliff, you know, without so much drama, you know, without, you know, the thugs below that were ready to beat you up, or the waves that could have beat you up. What kind of moments can happen in people's everyday lives? Like, could it be someone standing up for themselves at a volunteer meeting at school, or, you know, someone trying to make an impact in their community? What can these moments look like?
Yeah, beautiful question. And I want to make sure that I say this out loud, is that I was overwhelmed by the moment I shared to you. And it doesn't mean that somebody else would be. So that was my unique experience on top of the cliff, right? And so some people are just, they're fine there. So another moment for other people, it might be saying the most intimate thing to a loved one. It might be putting your hand up at a board meeting. It might be saving enough money to take a shot to be able to build the business that you've always wanted to build. It might be having the courage and the resources and the plan to fundamentally change the way that you do your life now. And it might be making the commitment to have a second or third or fourth child. It might be to have a first child. So there are these moments for all of us to really capture the opportunity to be authentically ourselves and to have the courage and the mental skills training that we can train our mind to be able to go and follow that accordingly. So it's available for all of us, and it's all the time. And we just need to listen more deeply to what's within.
You are such an inspiration, really, Mike. I thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, listen, one more question. Now, with all the people that you've interviewed, all the people that are at the top of their game, I mean, a lot of these people are also extremely wealthy, right? Mm-hmm. Probably in the top 1%. So, like, what is your opinion of money?
It's an amplifier, and it's a tool. So it amplifies the nature within a person. And so if you're an anxious person and you have money, you'll become more anxious. If you're an angry person and you have money, you'll be a bit more hostile. You'll abuse power. If you're a kind, loving person, you're probably going to do really good with that money. And so it's an amplifier and it's a tool. And if it's anything other than that, it becomes, I think, a real challenge. And many of us want to attach money to buying either people's time and or buying things so that we can feel important. And it's an incredible trap. Now, I'm not saying that it's bad and it's wrong, and I want to be able to not be run by my money that I have, but to use it accordingly, to amplify the good within, to celebrate other people, and to use it as a tool to potentially do good for others as well. So, you know, that's the way I think about it. And I think it's our currency to be able to get some really cool things done, but it's not necessary other than food and shelter. But, you know, for many of us, we can do better than food and shelter. We can move up that ladder to be able to follow our authentic self and to do good along the way. And I sound like, when I say everything that just happened, I got this little critic in my mind that's saying, listen, it's not all roses and butterflies. Like, it's hard work, and we have to do those hard yards, and there's real challenges to be authentic. So I just want to, like, I really appreciate the razor's edge and the difficulty that we all face to be able to become. And so money's an important tool. And before we wrap up, I want to say I love the concept that you are providing for people to be able to share stories. Stories are the medium of which we learn, which we express, which we reveal who we are working on becoming. And it's this connection and this fibric relationship. It's the fibers between the relationship that allow us to feel bonded and connected to people. And it's an art and it's a science. And I want to thank you for the opportunity for including me in this experience that you've created for so many.
Ah, thank you so much. And really, you guys, you have to check out Finding Mastery. You're going to love it. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. I want to thank you guys again so much for tuning in today. Follow Michael Gervais on Twitter, @MichaelGervais, and let him know you enjoyed his story. And then follow me over there as well, @StoryWorthy. And feel free to email me at info@storyworthypodcast.com. And if you're really feeling kind, get over to iTunes and leave Storyworthy a good review. I always need this. 5 stars and a good review. And join us next week on Storyworthy for the talented singer Rena Strober and her story, Watching a Mob Hit.
And every Monday night, without a doubt, Frankie would hit the jukebox and I would sing Don't Rain on My Parade every single Monday night. And then all of a sudden I heard pop.
Don't miss this incredible story by singer-actress Rena Strober. Now, I want to thank everyone over at Wondery Media, including Hernan Lopez and Jeffrey Glazer. And one more time, on behalf of my guest today, Michael Gervais. Thanks, Mike.
Pleasure.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.